The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Chris Carson. You listen to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the epic Roster Watch podcast brought to you by RosterWatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap here with Byron Lambert, and it's awesome to be back here on the pod, bringing it live to you on YouTube and on Periscope, and also, of course, here on the podcast feed. A quick reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, if you could please give us a thumbs up on there. If you could write a comment below, it would definitely help our robot overlords and get them very happy in their tiny robot pants. Helps with the algorithm. It sends more people to the stream, and we'd certainly appreciate it. We'll make sure to reply to every comment underneath there. So subscribe, Apple Podcasts, wherever it is you're listening. Subscribe, rate, review, but especially on YouTube, because our silent partner, whose name I won't mention, keeps fucking hammering us with this. So that's ask people to please comment. So there we go, Byron. Before we get started today, we're going to talk about winners and losers from the NFL draft. I think you have prepared a list of like five running back winners. Of course, there's some losers that we're going to talk about. But I just wanted to ask you first, just a couple from a couple bits of news and notes. As I put out the 2020 best ball cheat sheet for the version 2.0 that just came out, there was a bunch of stuff that got all twisted up, and a bunch of people that we had to really move a whole lot. Do you think, just before we even get started, let me ask you this. Are you going to talk about Leonard Fournette at all?
No. Nope.
With any of your, so you don't consider him a winner of the draft, even though they didn't draft anybody. They took Tavian Feaster from Clemson. They took James Robinson from Illinois State, but both those guys were undrafted free agents. Chris Thompson now goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You're not going to call him a winner. Why did you? He's kind of technically probably a winner from the draft standpoint, right? Did you think about including him?
I mean, to me, he's maybe an honorable mention guy. It's kind of hard to call somebody a winner when their team was trying to trade them the entire draft.
Do you think it's true that they couldn't get a seventh rounder for him?
Yeah, I just don't. Nobody, but for what they wanted, they had no takers, and by the time they were to day three, everybody had their running backs at that point. So it didn't make sense. I mean, I suppose you can make a twisted argument that he was a winner. I think he's an honorable mention. You know, we hear Doug Marrone coming out in the last few days supporting the run him until the wheels fall off narrative, but it's far from sure, man. You worry about, I'm not that worried about Chris Thompson, but I hate Jay Gruden. We hate the Jaguars. You know, the 100 targets for Leonard Fournette, I mean, everybody continues to forget that. He had 100 targets last year. I mean, that was that's very important. So I don't know that Chris Thompson is going to take that much away. I just don't think they had anybody else who could come in on third down. I mean, we know Armstead probably can, but, he didn't really I'm not sure he really capitalized on the opportunities he got last year to the fullest. So I'm not sure I'm so worried about Thompson, but you worry there could be a midseason trade, kind of a la Kenyon Drake last year, who was in the final year of his deal. Somebody was willing to make that trade, midseason, even if there's an injury, something like that. So, you make a good point. In some ways, he is a winner. It's just kind of ironic the player whose team was trying to trade him the entire draft and really couldn't get anything of value in return is to call him a winner. But in a twisted way, that is true.
Leonard Fournette's ADP in best ball leagues since the NFL draft has now fallen to basically 23.5, 23, 20. So the second round, third round turn with Chris Thompson being there. Do you think I mean, we had Nixon, the lead singer from what's his band? Shit. Framing Hanley, but he's also a guy who I play in that dynasty league with that dynasty startup with Siege in, and he had a really good draft in that league. Seems like a super sharp guy and had a bunch of good takes on the podcast. You should go back and listen to that one if you haven't. But he said like a month ago that he had it on good authority the Jags were going to go after Chris Thompson, and I thought it was cockamamie, and it turned out to be true. And I said at the time, if Chris Thompson were to go there, it would worry me about Leonard Fournette, because it did seem like Leonard Fournette was forced maybe more targets than we would expect, right? It doesn't seem is it optimal to be targeting Leonard Fournette 100 times in a football season given his particular skill set? Do you think that's – I mean, we've always said that Fournette can catch better than people give him credit for. But is it – I mean – does he really need to be the usage monster that a Christian McCaffrey is or something in the passing game? And is the, you know, Jay Gruden has, you know, he has the connection with Chris Thompson. He knows how to use him in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is preferred to use Leonard Fournette like that and to give him as much volume as possible. I mean, he's really not much different than a Zeke Elliott. I mean, truthfully, think about the $90 million Dallas is paying Zeke Elliott, and you have Leonard Fournette about to hit the streets for peanuts. In the next 12 months, it's just a crazy disparity when you think of that, when you zoom out and think of that. But I mean, here's the thing. I'm not surprised by Chris Thompson, the signing. It makes sense to me given Jay Gruden and considering what's going on, the lack of overall depth on the roster there at that position. But if you look at it, I mean, Chris Thompson didn't come in and get, I mean, we might want to double check, but I don't remember him coming in and getting the big volume last year, coming off the injury that at times we thought he might. I mean, we kept looking at him as a possible deep flex play or a waiver wire guy there through the earlier part of the season. And I have to go back and look at his stats, but I mean, that was Jay Gruden's guy. And he didn't really get him that involved last year in Washington. It seems like they certainly could have with the rookie quarterback. So, I mean, it's not optimal. It concerns me a little bit. I'm more worried about just the entire situation. I mean, I think if Leonard Fournette falls to – if we start to get an ADP in round three, especially the back end of round three, closer to draft times, then I think you're going to still want to go in pretty deep there.
All right. So Trashman and I talked a little bit about some fantasy losers at the running back position from the 2020 NFL draft, guys like, you know, Damian Williams with Clyde Edwards-Helaire coming in there. Guys like Jonathan Taylor guys like Marlon Mack with Jonathan Taylor coming in there. Guys like Justin Jackson, who looked like he was set up to be sort of a 1B there to Austin Eckler with the Chargers. Now he has Josh Kelly to deal with. Who are some other losers? I'm trying to think of just some off the top. Chase Edmonds is probably a bit of a loser with Eno Benjamin coming in there to sort of be the backup to Kenyon Drake. Devin Singletary is probably a little bit of a loser with Zach Moss getting drafted to the Buffalo Bills. Those were all guys we talked about in that podcast with Trash Man. But for this one, Byron has some fantasy winners at the running back position among running back veterans. So why not just get started with, I think you got five of them. Do you want to just go down the list, or do you want to go to the honorable mention dudes, or how do you want to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I think all of these narratives are important. It's just that to me, if you're not a winner, kind of goes without saying that you may have been a loser. I know everybody's interested in everything, but I think folks are most interested in who's the winner. Who are the guys that get the big boosts to their value coming out of the draft? And so, you know, having already reflected extensively about the fallout from the draft on the rookie running back class last week, Alex, you know, we talked about, you know, in terms of the rookie class, the big winners there, you know, really versus their pre-draft rankings were obviously Clyde Edwards-Helaire to Kansas City and Cam Akers to the Rams and Keyshawn Vaughn to Tampa.
You know, Daryl Henderson, another giant loser. We have DevRock in the chat saying that Jamal Williams is a loser because of AJ Dillon. I agree. I think Aaron Jones is a loser because of AJ Dillon myself too. But yeah, understood. Yeah.
Obviously, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins landed in desirable locations as well, but they were at the top of
everything. Justice Hill is a huge loser in this. Probably the biggest loser.
Yeah, he is. That is a huge loser. That's really, really bad in Dynasty for folks with Justice Hill shares, because he had a chance there before this. But, you know, it goes, you know, Justice Hill is, you know,
he might land on his feet somewhere and be good down the road.
He's a good player. That was a deep class last year, but it was still hard to get him above like RB8, RB9, RB10 in that class. You just see year after year after year, the dudes that are drafted in that, I think he was round four, man. It's just a really tough sledding for those guys moving forward. So anyways, nonetheless, considering, you know, the analysis that we've already put forth regarding the fallout from the draft in terms of the rookie running back class and who are the guys that really got a big bump there, I thought for this one, I'd focus on my top five running back winners, my top five veteran running back winners post NFL draft, Alex. You know, these are guys who emerged stronger after the draft than they were before. So I'll begin with the guy that may have been the biggest winner, second-year running back Miles Sanders of the Philadelphia Eagles. They didn't draft a single running back. The guys behind him on the depth chart are Boston Scott, Corey Clement, and Elijah Holyfield. 229 touches last season for Miles Sanders, including 63 targets. I think there's a real chance he pushes for 275 to 300 touches this year, Alex, and may even end up resulting in 80 to 100 targets in the passing game, which would be a massive boon, you know, even and especially in a Doug Peterson offense. So I look at Miles Sanders as one of the big, big veteran winners after the NFL draft at the running back position.
You know, the one thing I worry about with Miles Sanders is just the fact that that offense doesn't, they're committed to a committee. They're committed to a committee. I worry that Miles Sanders is not ever going to get fed there. I know that it felt like he was coming into his own last year, but man, there was a tweet yesterday from Scott, one of our great friends, one of our oldest friends, Scott Barrett, who now is with fantasypoints.com with Hanson and those guys. He put out this list of, 18 plus touch running back games since 2016, and Detroit has had 17. We know that they're committed to a committee, right? They've had a running back go over since 2016. They've had a running back go over 18 touches 17 times. They were last on the list, second to last on the list, Philadelphia. That it's happened 18 times. For context, at the top of the list that Scott Barrett put together, Dallas has done it 54 times. The Rams have done it 46 times. Pittsburgh 45, Chargers 43, you know, 17 and 18 is, you know, piddly. And I mean, the next one up after that is at least 21 with Miami. And think about who Miami's given 18 plus touches to over the course of the last 4 years. And you can't really think of that many guys. It's been a struggle fest to get consistent touches there with the Philadelphia Eagles. Are you comfortable knowing all of that and knowing that Miles Sanders is a winner and that Miles Sanders is a G and that we love him? Are you comfortable taking Miles Sanders before? Well, we just talked about Leonard Fournette. The ADPs say, you know, Miles Sanders goes before Leonard Fournette. Do you take him before Leonard Fournette? How do you compare him to Aaron Jones? I feel like that's the kind of area of the world that we need to be talking about, with Miles Sanders having an ADP that's sort of in the Kenyon Drake, Aaron Jones, Leonard Fournette territory. Well, like how do you parse all that out?
Yeah, I mean, I'd take Miles Sanders over all those guys. I mean, you can make
over Kenyon Drake.
You can make an argument with Drake, and I'm going to get to Drake here in a minute. I mean, I think you can make the argument for Drake. I mean, listen, I was reading that same thread yesterday. I thought there was a pretty sharp commenter in that thread who, you know, he thought that maybe Scott Barrett was falling into the coaching corollary cliche. And I'm not sure that's a trap we want to fall into with Miles Sanders, because we look at the actual actions.
Somebody talking about a coaching corollary cliche. I know that had to be our other good friend, the Podfather. I'm sure because he loves cliches and he loves ripping on coaching corollary.
It was a random commenter in there.
Okay, definitely a Podfather listener. Definitely a Matt Kelly listener.
Interesting thread, and so of course I was perusing. that brings out some of the sharp fans and interjecting their analysis. Anyways, nonetheless, I think you want to look at the actions of the organization. So, first and foremost, Miles Sanders is just flat out a better running back than they've had in Philadelphia in a while. They haven't done anything to bolster the position. You're talking about committed to a committee. Who's the committee here? His backups are Boston Scott, Corey Clement, and Elijah Holyfield. Who the hell is the committee?
Boston Scott wasn't bad in the year last year, man.
But they're going to have 400 plus touches at the running back position. So, that leaves, if Boston Scott is the only threat to Miles Sanders, that leaves a boatload of action available to Miles Sanders. Corey Clement, they've shown they hate him and very little commitment, even though we think he's a decent, he's not.
Really, Boston Scott got 23 touches in week 17 last year. He had a 16 touch game. He had a 13 touch game, a 9 touch game, a 23 touch game, and then in the wild card game
was also a rookie, right? We heard it from
Yeah, 9 touches.
Jacobs, they're waiting until year 2 for these guys to be able to pass protect before they give them more action. I just think if you look at the circumstantial evidence of the writing on the walls, it dictates that you have to be very interested in Miles Sanders getting at least 250 touches this year, and there's a strong chance he goes 275, 300. And if he goes over that, it might be a little bit shocking, but the touches are going to be there to go around. So Miles Sanders, in my opinion, a big winner post NFL draft, came out stronger than maybe, beforehand. I just don't worry about Corey Clement and Elijah Holyfield. I think you're right. Boston Scott could still get a little bit of run there, Alex.
So is he just a runner up or is he top 5?
No, he's one of the top 5 running back winners post.
Who are the runners up?
Well, we'll get to those in a minute. So one of my other big winners here, top 5 post draft.
No. We have to end with the number 1 winner, and so we got to do the runners up before we get to number 1. Just for the flow of the show. All right. So let's not do number 1 and then do the and then do runners up.
Okay. I think you could argue Miles Sanders is number 1, but I'll leave somebody else for number 1 then. Honorable mentions, Le'Veon Bell. The New York Jets drafted LaMichael Perine in round 4. He has some handcuff potential, but really doesn't offer much more than that. The Jets took a tackle in round 1, Mekhi Becton, pick 11. So they invested highly in the offensive line, hopefully to book into him with Adoga out of USC last year. He's still a little concerned about the interior of the line there. Ryan Khalil didn't work out last year. It looks like he's gone this season. They did pursue an offensive guard in round 4. So you like to see some help along the offensive line there, not only for Bell, but just for the entire offense for Darnold, because the more proficient the offense can be, that's going to benefit a guy like Bell big time. So, even you see him go after a Denzel Mims in round 2. They've added a Perriman to replace Robbie Anderson. Hopefully year 2, Darnold with Gaze. Hopefully Sam Darnold doesn't get, contract, mono again this year. It was just a rough season for that Jets offense to get on track last year. So I think you could make the argument that Le'Veon Bell, who's had an acrimonious, relationship, at least on the surface, with Adam Gaze there in New York, obviously a lackluster season last year, a lot of it because of the poor play of the offense and the offensive line. A guy who looks like he's definitely lost some juice, but obviously still offers plenty in the passing game. So them not going in on another running back in a deep class, I think bodes pretty well for Le'Veon Bell as a player, that at least benefited in some regard from the fallout from the NFL draft. I'd say the next.
What do you think about Le'Veon? What do you think about Le'Veon Bell going 4 spots after Chris Carson right now? Yeah, ADP of 38. Or no. Chris Carson's going 3 spots after Chris Carson. How do you stack those two guys up? Chris Carson, especially after the news that we've gotten that Rashad Penny, it looks like he might miss a little bit of time to start the season. That's probably pretty good for Chris Carson. But then again, they did, I guess who'd they draft? DJ, was it DJ Dallas that they drafted? And then, I mean, Travis Homer's still there. What do you think about Chris Carson? To me, that's those two probably shouldn't be that close. I feel like Chris Carson might be being a little bit overdrafted right now, or maybe do you like him a little bit more than I do?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So do you like him better than Le'Veon?
Yep.
Really? Okay. Do you have a reasons why?
I can get to that in a few minutes. So okay. Another of the honorable mention guys, Alex, would be Raheem Mostert of the San Francisco 49ers. The team traded Matt Breida. They did have Jerick McKinnon, who offered to play for free this offseason, come back on a one-year, $1 million deal. So, you know, it does look like we're going to have Tevin Coleman and Jeff Wilson back in the mix potentially at this point. We were really, really hoping from the outset of the offseason that we'd see the 49ers ditch one or more of these guys. So we would have liked to have seen McKinnon or Coleman go the way of Matt Breida in terms of Raheem Mostert's value. The team drafted Jamichael Hasty, who I don't out of Baylor. I don't really expect to be relevant this year at all. One narrative interesting to watch is that the 49ers aren't in horrible cap shape, but they're going to have to clean up the cap a little bit there. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with Tevin Coleman's $5 million cap figure. You know, that said, he's got $2 million in dead money that accompany that. So I'm not sure if it will. So I think the trade of Matt Breida is a small bump for Raheem Mostert. We need to see a little bit more movement there and to get really bullish on him. Or to feel maybe as good about him as we did when the season ended. Nonetheless, I thought he was an honorable mention there. Alex, Joe Mixon.
What about Tevin Coleman, too? I mean, don't you think just narrowing this thing down to where it's maybe two-headed monster with Mostert and Coleman helps Coleman at least more than it? Coleman's current ADP, 102. I mean, he's going 27 picks after Kerryon Johnson, who's now in a committee with DeAndre Swift. That talk about another loser from the draft, Kerryon Johnson. Ronald Jones, another loser from the draft with Keyshawn Vaughn going there, is going 13 spots over Tevin Coleman. And this is only over the course of the last week. This is post NFL draft. It feels like Tevin Coleman might be somebody who we're sleeping on who the community is sleeping on just a little bit. Being able to take that guy in the ninth round. I mean, he popped off for big games last year, even when we had some fourth asshole coming in here sometimes, right? The Jeffrey Wilsons and the guys like this. So,
I mean, you could make Tevin Coleman, argument. I think. Yeah. What I'm saying is though, I mean, in terms of, you know, Mostert is the preeminent guy. So, I mean, I think you can in a twisted way kind of look. I just say Coleman with the $5 million cap figure, he's the biggest risk to get cut out of that group. You had McKinnon re-sign. Wilson appears like he's going to be there. So you can make the same argument for Coleman for Breida. I think you're just making it for the second guy, and he's the guy I'd say is at most risk of at some point being cut. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I think that's unlikely. That's why Mostert still is only kind of an honorable mention guy. Not enough has occurred for any of these guys to get the big boon, but shedding Matt Breida from the roster certainly benefits to your point, Tevin Coleman, Raheem Mostert. We'll have to see how Jerick McKinnon plays into that, but a small boost for, you know, the remaining marquee guys in the 49ers backfield. In Cincinnati, Joe Mixon in a contract year, no other running backs drafted by the team. Rodney Anderson from last year, always injured. Who knows with him? Unlikely to really have an impact in the NFL. Always surprised to see that Gio Bernard is still somehow on the team. You would think by now he would be gone, and you know all of his contracts would expire. But he is still looks like he'll still be with the team for the year. So we'll see what it means for Mixon long term, but for them not to draft a running back in a contract year to give themselves some
again out,
cushion, some
trash man. I talked about this. It's like, he's like, that's the face of the franchise. I'm like, are you fucking kidding? But Joe Burrow is the face of the franchise. And also, is Mixon really the type of guy? I mean, is Mixon over all of his off field stuff enough to where he has the sort of the, the cachet to be one of these guys that, that stages a long holdout? To me, though, like that feels like
he may
like
not be a guy that has the capital to be able to pull that off. So
yeah,
and it doesn't. You know, I think he saw what it, how it's worked out with guys like, you know, with Melvin Gordon last year, et cetera. But nonetheless, yep. I mean, he's only an honorable mention because we're already all pretty bullish on Joe Mixon and seem to be in a pretty good spot. But if you really think about it, for a running back in a contract year where these things are so uncertain for players, even the good players in that position, it was really an endorsement by the team not to go in on any running backs, even middle round running backs in such a deep class.
It's a good year.
Do anything in free agency. So I think Joe Mixon is a guy who came out at least, you know, on the surface a little bit stronger post-draft. Let me get to a few more honorable mention guys here before we get to the bigger winners, Alex. James Conner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Look, they took Anthony McFarland in round four. You know, obviously they still have Jalen Samuels and Benny Snell, but that
team's getting some buzz. Who's getting some buzz? Anthony McFarland. There's some of these beat writers that think that Anthony McFarland is going to be a bigger factor than maybe you and I are thinking right now.
Yeah, well, I don't trust most of the beat writers. They don't have anything to write about right now.
That's true.
You know, it's pretty clear to me that the Steelers just see Jalen Samuels and Benny Snell for backup running backs in this league. Samuels has had all, as good as we think he is, he's had all the opportunities in the world to climb the depth chart. He's performed admirably, but just never has. The team doesn't view him that way. Benny Snell looked pretty good last year. You know, he's kind of a three down guy that lacks a little bit of juice. We asked Kevin Colbert about him at the combine, if Snell was a player who deserved more playing time. And all he did was pivot to their commitment to giving James Conner every chance under the sun to reclaim, if not a full blown workhorse role, a clear cut lead role in that backfield. And I just think, as much as we like Anthony McFarland, it's not ideal adding anybody else to the Steelers' crowded backfield. It's just, I just don't see Anthony McFarland as the kind of player who's going to walk right into big volume, especially in a crowded backfield in Pittsburgh as a rookie. So again, it's unclear. So that's why I would just call James Conner an honorable mention. But I do think he comes out of the draft basically where in a similar spot to where we thought he was post combine, which was a guy that the Steelers are going to give a chance to that guy to have 18 plus touches a game this season. If they have their druthers, we'll see if he can live up to his end of the bargain. Since
the NFL draft, he's going 12 spots later than Devin Singletary. What do you think of that? Talking an ADP of 30 versus an ADP of 42. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I think you just have to make the argument that those are going to converge. It'd be difficult to.
It's almost like the fantasy communities.
Singletary, but that's a tough. You know, it's not that far apart, right? That's a much closer call. You mentioned it earlier, Alex. I'd say Kenyon Drake was another honorable mention guy in terms of the fallout. You know, a positive boost post draft. I think you said Chase Edmonds took a little bit of a hit there, obviously because the Cardinals drafted Eno Benjamin. That was late in the draft. We didn't really expect the Cardinals to go running back early after investing in Kenyon Drake this offseason. Like you said, Edmonds is still there. He's got a whole hive. He's flashed when he has had opportunities. Obviously, that offense can make anybody look pretty good. I just felt like coming out of the draft, when Kenyon Drake is your lead dude and you have opportunity to look at adding some other guys to fortify the position, I thought Kenyon Drake, a player who the industry, including us, were getting pretty high on pre-draft. I thought he came out of the draft in pretty good shape, Alex.
No arguments there.
And then last but not least, this one's maybe a little bit more creative. Honorable mentions. We spoke about Matt Breida being traded from the 49ers to the Dolphins mid-draft. I actually think Jordan Howard and Matt
Breida. I did too. I moved Jordan Howard up I moved him up. They've addressed the offensive line. It's going to be a better offense in general. Jordan Howard is a plotter, and he's not going to be anything that gets you excited. But you have that guy in fantasy as your running back four, which is where you can have him right now. You know, it's pretty appealing to me. You know, Tevin Coleman, Jordan Howard, they're these guys that are going in the same pocket as you know, Matt Breida is in that same pocket. These guys are going after Daryl Henderson. They're going 25 picks after Philip Lindsay, who is now a backup to Melvin Gordon. They're going at around the same time as players like Latavius Murray, who's a clear second fiddle option. You know, whenever we're looking at three guys there that I just mentioned that are at least 1Bs.
Yep. And if you really want to drill down into the situation in Miami, especially from a dynasty perspective or, you know, a 16-team type league or, you know, anything along those lines, a very competitive format, you know, the one thing you'll notice is that neither, we all know Jordan Howard isn't a pass-receiving maven. So you think, well, maybe Matt Breida coming from San Francisco will be that guy. You look down, you realize he's basically got the same statistical profile as Jordan Howard from a pass-receiving standpoint. So what that may do in a very sneaky way is leave an opportunity for Patrick Laird to continue to possibly be a third down back there in Miami. And you have to imagine they're going to be in catch-up mode quite a bit. I think there's a lot of touches to go around to the running backs in Miami this year. It's obviously a trash play, but I couldn't help but notice that. I mean, Laird was a guy getting 5-6 targets down the stretch last year, Alex, and that's enough to create some viability in PPR. And so those were my honorable mentions in terms of veteran running backs that I thought at least got a small bump or the appearance of a small bump in post-draft. That included Le'Veon Bell with the Jets, Raheem Mostert with the San Francisco 49ers, Joe Mixon with the Cincinnati Bengals, James Conner with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Kenyon Drake in Arizona, and then Jordan Howard and Matt Breida down in Miami. So that was the honorable mention, guys. If you're ready, I can get to the veterans I viewed.
All right, so we've already talked about Miles Sanders. So we have one down.
One down, so four more guys to go.
All right, four more. Drum roll, please. Who's in fourth place?
Oh, my Lord. I guess I'll have to rank these guys on the fly here. So we'll at number four, we'll just say at number five because Miles Sanders is going to be right up at the top. So okay, at number five, if you are already inclined to take a chance on David Johnson in Houston, it appears your position has been enhanced post-draft. No running backs drafted by the Texans, and all they've got are Duke Johnson, Caron Higdon, and Buddy Howell on deck, Alex. You know, we're not sure if David Johnson will be able to deliver the goods, but the opportunity is as ripe post-draft as it could be, in my opinion.
Did they not draft the New Mexico State kid, he wasn't drafted. I forget the guy's name. Deutsch took him in. Jason Huntley, was he not drafted? Let me just see. I believe they took Jason Huntley at some point, but that's something I'll have to look up here. Was he even at the combine? Yeah, he was at the combine.
No, the Houston Texans took Ross Blacklock, a defensive tackle, in round two. They took Jonathan Greenard at edge from Florida in round three. They took Charlie Hack at tackle from
North Carolina
in round four. John Reed at cornerback in round four out of Penn State, and wrapped the draft up with Isaiah Coulter, wide receiver from Rhode Island, in round five.
So why do I have Jason Hunt? Why did I have it written down that he went to the Texans? Okay, well I need to fix that. But anyway, you can carry on. I was wrong. You were right.
So would you agree that David Johnson is in pretty good shape after the draft?
If you liked him before, how can you not like him now? Right?
Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. All right. So at number four, veteran running back winners here post-draft, Alex, Austin Eckler, Los Angeles Chargers. They drafted Joshua Kelly out of UCLA, a guy we like in round four. Obviously, they have Justin Jackson still there, who Coach Anthony Lynn has given plenty of lip service to. But all of that was undermined when they took Kelly in round four. I think in the end, Austin Eckler dodged the big bullet and looks locked and loaded for that 15 to 20 touches per game that Tom Telesco signaled to us at the NFL Combine when we had a chance to question him personally about Eckler's ability and viability as a lead back in this league. You know, he went to the extreme to try to muddy the waters by saying Austin Eckler will never be a 30 plus touch guy in this league, but who the hell is, right?
Yeah. So
we left Indy with a very strong signal from Tom Telesco, the general manager, that Austin Eckler was in for just about as many touches as he could handle this year. He is the de facto lead guy. And I think 15 to 18 touches a game is safe as can be. The really interesting, it'd be really interesting to see if Eckler can hit 20 touches a game this year. I think that's probably his upper limit, but I really feel the circumstances are going to dictate that that could be the case. So judging by the actions in the NFL draft, only adding a player in round four, Alex, I felt that we leave the NFL draft with Austin Eckler still with a lot of momentum heading into the season.
Do you like Miles Sanders better than Austin Eckler if you were picking in PPR right now? ADP, the consensus ADP is with Eckler by about four spots, 13.5 ish versus like 17.8 over the last since the draft.
I think so. That's a really close call. It's a really, really close call. I think Eckler feels like the safer bet there. I don't know.
Even with the quarterback situation?
Yeah, I don't know why. I feel like Eckler's never going to get 300 touches in the season, I don't think. I mean, if he goes for that 20 touches a game, he will. I think that's a big push. I don't know. That's a tough question. In terms of winners from the draft, I think Miles Sanders is a bigger winner than Austin Eckler is. Now we're talking about how comfortable I am with those guys in those roles. It's two really good options that – it's going to be tough to split the hairs on, Alex.
All right, so, but what if I asked you this? Austin Eckler at pick 201 or Miles Sanders at pick 206?
Then I would want Miles Sanders at pick 206.
Well, I think so too. Okay.
All right, my third biggest winner from the NFL draft, a veteran running back winner. We'll give that one to Chris Carson in Seattle, Alex. Like you mentioned, DJ Dallas out of Miami drafted in round four.
Who's not very good.
But the Seahawks took
I didn't think very high. I didn't think. Did you like – I don't think you and I ever did a DJ Dallas pod. Did you think very, very, very highly of him?
I mean, I couldn't get him into the upper echelon of my ranking story. He's really too relevant of a guy pre-draft.
All right.
At the round four pick signals something, though. But I just think you look at a DJ Dallas in round four to Seattle – that's pretty meaningless, at least this year, in my opinion. The Seahawks took a really nice offensive guard in round three, a player from the Senior Bowl out of LSU, Damian Lewis. I like seeing the team invest in that offensive line. It's annually been a substandard offensive line. Other than that, it's Travis Homer and Rashad Penny on the mend behind Chris Carson, Alex. You know, there was talk maybe somebody like a Fournette could get traded up there. That didn't happen. We had 315 touches last season for Chris Carson, including 47 targets. I mean, he's a player who's seen more touches every single year in the league. He's 25 years old, coming off back-to-back 1,300 total yard seasons. Now, look, the question would be, what is the status of his health, you know, the recovery of that hip injury that seemed like it could have been severe there at the end of the season. We got positive news out of the combine from Pete Carroll on that one to kind of begin to quash those concerns. And then I just think if you look at the draft, at what the Seahawks did in the draft and what the Seahawks did in free agency, it really tells us all we need to know about how they feel about Chris Carson and his health leading into the season. So, I mean, Chris Carson, a big winner, in my opinion, of the NFL draft, and definitely a running back, a veteran running back, who I think enters the month of May as we get closer to the season here is with a lot of momentum.
Is it just because we had word from a lot of people close to the Seattle team that they were going to draft a running back and all this, and they turned out not to draft one until day three, and it wasn't one that either of us were particularly high on from the tape, from the evaluation standpoint, because they did technically address it. They just didn't really address it with anybody that good. For me, the biggest boon to Chris Carson right now is not necessarily he's a winner from the draft. It feels like he's a winner from the injury fallout because it just feels like he's kind of recovering better from that injury than Rashad Penny is. I don't know, man. I love Mekhi Becton. And when I think about the Jets and I think about another year with Sam Darnold and just Le'Veon Bell there with those guys, I think I'm going to take Le'Veon Bell over Chris Carson. But you said earlier that that's not the way that you would go. Gun to your head, you pick Chris Carson?
Yeah, he's just been better. I trust the team more. I trust the offense more.
He's been better since Le'Veon's been in New Jersey, yeah, right? Like, all right.
1,300-plus yard seasons the last 2 years. You know, ascending touches every year, 315. He could. I mean, 315 last year. I mean, he's got no competition. He's going uncontested into, you know, as we head into the season as the clear lead guy, especially out of the gate. I think Chris Carson's going to get a lot of action. So, yeah, I mean, they're both winners. And you're right. His health is the biggest positive this offseason for Chris Carson. But given his health, given Rashad Penny's situation, given the fact that they don't have anybody else on the roster, I do think he was a winner from the draft because – with this kind of depth available, they could have easily. I mean, I know they exercised the fourth round pick, but I think they, you could have seen
it could him have been go someone better. Earlier. Right. Could be someone better. Yeah.
Could have seen him go a little earlier, get somebody a little bit better. And that would have made me a lot more nervous about Chris Carson's prospects heading in to the 2020 season, Alex. All right. So since we already covered Miles Sanders, we'll just give him the number two designation in terms of my top five biggest running back winners post NFL draft.
And things have gone exactly as I planned. We're going to be ending with the number one player.
Specifically,
the big climax. I hope you got a great take here.
So at number two, once again, that was just a recap. We have Miles Sanders as the number two big veteran running back winner post draft, Alex, because the Eagles didn't draft a running back. Behind him, all they've got are Boston Scott, Corey Clement, and Elijah Holyfield. Again, it was 229 touches, including 63 targets last year for Miles Sanders. And he's got a real opportunity here to push upwards towards that 300-touch mark and that, you know, 75 to 100 target mark, which would be just, you know, a mega boon for the second-year player, Miles Sanders, who obviously has electric upside with every single
touch. He's a sick talent. He's a sick talent. We can't forget it. Yeah.
Really, and you're gonna have some field stretchers out there now too.
Yep.
To start to open things up a little bit for a speed guy like that, man. You give Miles Sanders a sliver of space, a sliver of any more space than he had last year, and I think he's gonna do a lot of damage. And then, of course, at number one, top five veteran running back winners post draft, Alex, was Todd Gurley of the Atlanta Falcons. No running backs drafted.
I love that. Yeah, he is a winner. I had to move him up on the cheat sheet. I love it. I love it. It's a great take.
No running backs drafted by the Atlanta Falcons, and it's just a bunch of scrubs behind him in Brian Hill, Quadri Allison, and Ito Smith. Todd Gurley was still an RB2 last season on a respectable 254 touches. You know, despite the significant decline in his targets as a receiver last year in Los Angeles, he was still able to score the 14 touchdowns. You know, he cracked 1,000 yards. His efficiency declined big time everywhere. He down to 3.8 yards per carry, down to 6.7 yards per catch. He had been more like a 9 yard per catch guy, more like a 4.5 to 5 yard per carry guy. So those were big, big drops, but I like seeing that he could still handle 254 touches last year. And then with the Falcons not going in on the position in the draft, I just, you know, we're really hoping he's going to get that bounce this year, Alex, by inheriting, you know, a big portion of Devontae Freeman's target share from last season. It just really, really looks like Todd Gurley emerged from the NFL draft stronger than we could have ever thought.